Toronto! I wonder if they can hear it on Long Island.
Great move. What a goal. Beauty. Austin Matthews.
Bless you, boys. What a game.
Welcome to the Maple Leaf Hot Stove Podcast, episode 64. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Anthony Petrielli. We are coming to you after three games with varied results for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We had the win against the Edmonton Oilers, a lot of people consider it to be an uplifting win, one of the more successful outings of the season, followed by a game against the Hurricanes where you get the Joseph Woll performance that was enough to launch an entire news cycle about him stealing the net. It was, you know, to his credit, good performance, but it's funny how that works. And then most recently, a New Jersey Devils loss where the team, you could argue, played well for most of it, but made some pretty crippling mistakes that had Sheldon Keefe on their case after it. Anthony, what are the biggest takeaways from this little stretch of hockey since we last spoke?
This is why they're not higher in the division. I mean, like it's just a little bit too much Jekyll and Hyde. And, you know, the New Jersey game is giving away points. That's the reality. Like we've kind of talked how they're on the cusp of still challenging for home ice. And, you know, while they're playing New Jersey, Florida and Boston are playing each other. It's a regulation result, which is all you can really ask in that matchup between the two teams. And the Leafs are at home against New Jersey after a day off, after a loss that should probably have left a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth. And look, they came out, they had like just about 40 shot attempts in the first period. It's not like they didn't create anything. It's often the issue is they give things away like back in their end, just far too easily. You know, like you can't have Matthews score a goal, take the lead, and then you put out your fourth line and they immediately give it right back. In part, you know, this wasn't the very start of the sequence of that play, but Kevin Ball torching David Kampf up at the blue line to keep the puck in, just like that can't happen. Like that's why you're there. Like that's literally it.
The two words Kevin Ball, or three words, I guess, Kevin Ball and torching, like that gives you a clue that something has gone horribly wrong.
He can't go around you. Like if he tries to slip it through your stick, which is what he did, like that's got to be a breakaway for you. Like that's as easy as it gets, right? Like I get, you know, I even understand that they're pushing at the end, but Domi just no look three, you know, 180, somewhere between a 180 and 360ing a pass to the middle that ends up as a breakaway. Like that is a gift, you know, like you play, even if you go to the Carolina game, they only gave up two. Carolina had a ton of breakaways. You're a minute into that game. You're tired. You've traveled. So you'd think, you know, pretty like, let's keep things simple. Let's not shoot ourselves in the foot. And what happens? First shift, like second shift of the game, McCabe threw his own legs up the middle, goal, like gifts. Like they're just constantly handing out these free opportunities, and good teams are going to make you pay. And Jersey's record's not that good, but they are a good team. They're not good this year because of injuries. They're not.
Yeah, the talent struggling that they bring to the table is much better than what their record is suggesting. The New Jersey game is definitely frustrating from the Leafs' perspective because, like you said, they came out absolutely firing in that first period. Like it's actually one of the most dominant periods they've played, even though they're down 2-1, which just kind of goes to show the injustice associated with hockey sometimes. But then on the flip side, they did the first goal, the knuckle puck, whatever, that can happen.
It's a bad goal. The second goal is another gift, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a free gift. Again, it's like, why do they have a 2-on-1 there? Like,
and part of what we've talked about with this group is the idea that you can't place all the blame defensively on the defenseman. Like it's very easy to say like, oh, this defense group is not particularly strong. And it's not. Like from a straight talent perspective, the Maple Leafs do not have a super talented defense core. But that Bobby McMahon play that allows that 2-on-1 rush to happen, that Max Domi play that allows that counterattack to happen, when the forwards don't do the right things in the offensive end, and sometimes that means like, you know, Domi being overly ambitious. It was a bit of a weird pass in general because it seemed like the upside was getting Simon Benoit the puck near the point, which is not going to do anything, as we know. When they don't do that, like, you put the defense in a really tough position a lot of time, and they don't have the skill to overcome that. And to be honest, I think a lot of the times the blueprint for the Maple Leafs has been high-level offensive skill with some looseness, and then the goalie is the one to potentially bail you out. And right now, the goaltending is very fluid and difficult to count on. And, like, there's definitely a world where Joseph Woll bails them out a couple times against New Jersey, and they win that game 5-2, 5-3. And so in some way, shape, or form, like, I felt like Keefe's reaction to it was a bit of an overreaction in the sense that, like, there were some bad moments, but they did carry a lot of that game. And it's easy to envision a different result with different goaltending. But at the same time, when you play good teams and you give, as you put it, gifts, those teams are likely to convert on that. And what's going to happen in the playoffs? You're playing really good teams. You're playing Boston. You're playing Florida. You're playing the type of teams that can make you pay, even if your mistakes aren't that many, if they're severe enough. You're going to get hurt on rushes the other way or on giveaways in your own zone. And this has been a frustration with this team for the course of this year. And to be honest, over quite a few years, is that you can't afford to give stuff away against really good teams and against bad teams. And when you have good enough goaltending, sometimes you can, but that's just not where the Leafs are.
I actually liked his reaction, to be honest. The ones that frustrate me more are, like, he'll look at a game like that and say, well, we had a ton of chances. Like, if we just capitalized a little bit more, you know, we could have distanced ourselves. But I thought immature was the right way. Like, we talk about, you know, they were all over them in the first. Like, that's just a fact. There's nothing, like, that's just what happened. But you can't give up a 2-on-1 like that towards the end because you just get over aggressive pinching for offense. Like, we've talked about this, especially at home, because we've been talking about that home road record split for like almost a month now, right? And I continue to say, like, I just think they get, like, they try to get too cute at home. Like, they try to force things. And that goal to me is, like, them forcing it. It's like, what is the purpose of that? Like, how isn't there a proper high guy? Like, how is McCabe trapped in, you know, the corner of the blue line offensive zone while guys are going down on them? Getting, like, that's a practice 2-on-1. Like, that was from their own blue line down the ice. And, like, there's just no need for it. Like, that cannot happen. And when I think about them playing Boston this year, who obviously swept them, although the Leafs picked up a couple points in extra time. So take of that what you will. But what Boston essentially does against them every time is they just sit back. They say, like, we'll wait for them to make mistakes because we know they will. Like, they'll push up a little bit too aggressively, more so than they should, and we'll just counterattack them. If you go look at, like, a good chunk of Boston goals, it's just them like stuffing mistakes by the Leafs, who generally started with possession of the puck right down their throat and or special teams. So, you know, the problem is you can't be giving things away for cheap at 5-on-5 when you also, generally speaking, don't have a penalty kill that can kill a penalty, and your power play is also not doing that well. Like, you have to, like, win somewhere, right? When they're going, they do what they did against New Jersey in terms of all those attempts, and they score a ton because they're like one of the most explosive teams in the league. They should be able to create a 4-line attack. So, you know, it's not like, how are these guys good? Like, we know how they're good. Like, they score a ton. And, like, when they click, like, they're hard to stop. But it's just, like, this constant theme of giving away things for free that, yeah, I think, you know, it's the end of March now. Like, it's about, but next time we record an episode, it's going to be April. Like, at some point, he's got to sit there and say, like, this is outrageous. But it's also not lost on me, like, all of the veterans that were out of the lineup in particular when he's talking about, like, an immature game. And, like, I wonder about the effects of that, right? Like, you know, Morgan Rielly obviously wasn't in. Cale Järnkrok, like, hasn't been in for a while. Joel Edmondson wasn't playing. Like, those are three of their oldest guys. Like, you know, you could technically say they're two oldest guys, Ryan Reeves, Mark Giordano, not in the lineup. And probably not in terms of, like, what they, you know, some of those guys bring for play, but in terms of some of those guys kind of, like, patrolling things from, like, a maturity standpoint and how they approach the game and like not, you know, again, giving things away like nonstop. Just, I wondered about that. And it would be, obviously, we could never quantify that. Like, we're not on the bench. But I, that thought kind of crossed my mind in terms of like the lack of like veteran leadership, essentially, that was in the lineup. Like that third line, which I've kind of railed against now for a couple games since it's been put together, like they're good for a goal against a game, like at least. Like they're like, that's an irresponsible line. It's an irresponsible line for the coaching staff to put together, to be honest. Like they're not doing anybody any favors. Like Nick Robertson is not a right winger. I think everybody knows that. And then you have Pontus Holmberg, who's like sliding to center for like the first time in months. And you're like, hey, why don't you center Nick Robertson, who's not a right winger? And like, you know, they have flashes because they're all skilled and whatnot, but that's not a real line. And so, yeah, just some frustrating points, I guess I would call it.
I mean, you know, I think we, and specifically me, have been fairly effusive with praise for Bobby McMahon, for instance, but it's easy to remember or to forget that like last night is his 57th game in the NHL. Like he may be an older guy, maybe someone with experience. He's actually someone who's played relatively well defensively compared to a lot of these other guys. But there are a lot of players on these teams that this team that don't have a ton of that experience. And it seems like there's almost an impatience to the game at times where they're chasing the game, and whether that's offensively, where, as you mentioned, they sometimes they don't necessarily realize when they're beat and when they're, when the opportunity has kind of dried up and it's time to pull back, and they kind of keep pushing. And that's when they make themselves vulnerable to counterattacks. And then the other way, sometimes defensively, it feels like there are opportunities to kind of calm the game down, possess the puck and get it out slowly. And instead you get, you know, like the weirdness of the Jake McCabe pass that gets picked off. And, you know, McCabe has been really good for most of the season. I don't want to pick on him in particular, but when you talk about Boston, for instance, how they're happy to hang back, give you low quality opportunities, and then find a way to counterpunch. Like that's a very mature way to play the game that the Leafs don't seem to be able to emulate and haven't really been able to emulate. And I'm not saying necessarily that they have the exact same personnel to play the game Boston plays, but there's a reason that that type of hockey is often really successful against high quality teams. And, you know, look at the Bruins. They just lost Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, and they're able to carry forward a lot of the same principles, a lot of the same success, in part because of how they play the game and not only who they have on their team.
And if you look back at their playoff runs, it's often that recipe to beat them, right? Like that's how Boston beat them twice. Like they packed the house, hung back, capitalized on mistakes, that kind of thing. And then special teams, right? Special teams and everything else we say, like it's always special teams, like power play and penalty kill have both been major problems year after year. So like that's important to flag. But at 5-on-5, you know, Habs, Columbus, same way, right? Like they're retreating back. We'll wait for these guys to make mistakes. Like we'll wait for our 2-on-0 in overtime. Like that kind of thing. Last year, I didn't think Tampa did that to the Leafs. Like I actually just think Tampa dictated play in that first round and outplayed them by and large. And Samsonov was excellent. But the year before, when they beat them and it was even, like I thought Tampa was more to that. Like we can't open it up here and like trade chances with them. Like we'll again play that a bit more of that older veteran mature game, we'll call it, and like counterpunch them. So again, like I see, you know, and Keefe has been this is year five for him. So, and he's had like all of these repeated playoff experiences. Like even if you go look back at the Florida series, right? Like the Leafs couldn't score and Florida just defended. And then they would wait, like, go look at a bunch of their goals, like turnover. It's like 3-on-2, right? Like the, you know, the series winning goal, 3-on-2, like almost all of these plays, like it's not the other team, in this case, Florida, like going down the ice and creating something. It's often like the puck, the sequence started on like a Leaf stick and there was some really poor puck management and or decision-making all wrapped in one. And then they, you know, shoved it down their throat. Or you'd look at like certain plays and go like, why didn't that Leaf defender just like chip it up the wall and like live to fight another day? And instead, it's like they're holding on to the puck, trying to make a play in the Stanley Cup playoffs when there's no time or space. So all that bringing that all up to say is, like, I understand why Keefe is frustrated and comes out with this, like, this was an immature game, which I believe Matthews also echoed to say, like, yeah, like, that can't happen. So, like, you know, it's not DEFCON 5. It's not, like, 9-1-1. Again, like, when you're missing so many guys and your roster's constantly in flux, like, this, like, part of this is sometimes going to happen. I think the thing that probably is flagged the most that I'll say in it is oftentimes their default is this, though, right? It's like that impatient game you mentioned where they're like, instead of saying, like, okay, like, there's some things that are not favorable to us right now, like, we should, like, make sure that we, you know, protect our house first and, like, don't give anything away for free. Instead, it's like, let's push for offense and, like, almost lose our minds a little bit as to, like, defending properly. So, like, that's their natural instinct, right? It's like, again, like, you go back to the Carolina games, like, there's no reason to start a game like that. There's no reason to be bleeding, like, 5-6 breakaways and penalty shot against in that game. Like, that game should be super simple at that point. You guys just played a big emotional game the night before. I understand it's a schedule loss. It ends up being 2-1. Joseph Wall was excellent. So all those things, but just, like, the sheer number of breakaways they gave up that game was outrageous. The sheer number of high quality scoring chances that the Devils had 5 goals, right? Like, I'm not counting empty netters. So it's like that kind of piece where it's like, you got to focus on defending. Like, that's what the playoffs are more about. Like, you can't just come out and blitz teams every game.
Yeah, it's interesting to consider how much Keefe owns this, right? Because, like you said, he's been behind the bench for quite some time now. There have been times, you know, especially last season, where the Leafs have defended at a high level, but the type of problems we're describing right now, if you've been watching the Leafs for a while, like, these are very familiar problems that have played into their playoff losses, have played into, you know, probably their inability to win divisions, which has been a bigger part of their story than people probably talk about. And so this year, you know, the injuries are brutal. Like, people are in and out of the lineup all the time. It's chaotic. So you could paint a picture where you say, you know, Keefe has been dealing with this absolute churn all season long, and he's held together, and the Leafs have done sort of fine, and they're headed for maybe one step below in the standings where you'd expect. But it's a minor disappointment in the context of just far more churn than they normally have from an injury standpoint. And arguably, you could say Treliving not providing them with huge reinforcements at the deadline, and, you know, can quibble over his offseason moves as well. So, like, there's a way to paint this picture where you say Keefe has been in a difficult position all year and he's done okay with it. But you could also say Keefe has been around for a while and there are issues that he has not really been able to clean up. And special teams have been a huge issue. And that's something that often gets assigned to coaching, which, you know, fair or unfair, like, there are certain groups, especially on the power play, you can't coach up a bunch of scrubs to score goals pretty much. And, like, if you have a bunch of high end talent, you're probably going to do okay, like the Leafs have done when Marner's been in the lineup. Where do you land on the spectrum of Keefe has coached well this year under difficult circumstances to Keefe has failed to bring this group ahead and kind of snuff out some problems that have haunted them in the past?
Probably somewhere in the middle. I think he does a good job of managing certain things and Toronto, and, you know, coaches are hired to get fired, so at some point he will obviously inevitably not be here, and there are things that I will ultimately look back on and say he did a good job of managing the market compared to other coaches. Like, I find him overwhelmingly positive generally speaking in post games, and I know that frustrates people at times. Like, you'll hear him, like, after a bad game, and, like, that they come out and win, and he'd be like, well, they stuck with it. That's his line this year. Like, we stuck with it. We came out of it and, you know, we got the result or whatever. And it's frustrating because you want to sit there as a fan and you're like, I want this guy to, you know, be honest about what happened. But I think that is watching him compared to previous Leaf coaches and how they would come out and like, call it more what it is. And I know fans, like, thirst for that, especially in Toronto. I do think how he handles that is probably more logical and helps him, like, has helped him stay here as long as he has. Because, You can't keep coming into the market and like throwing out just absolute nukes that people are going to go off on, right? Like, old enough to remember when Randy said that James Reimer was just okay, and then it became like a story for like a month, which was like a fair thing. Like, if you go back and look,
he was just okay.
Yeah. If you go back and like watch the game that he was referencing, like, he was just okay. Like, he was not good. And
just okay could have been generous, even.
Yeah. Right. Like, that was bordering on positive at that point. And then, of course, like, the media like goes and runs to Reimer and they're like, Randy said you were just okay. And he was just like, oh, like, what was he going to say back to that? And then it became a thing. And it was like this constant story that people like picked on. I'm picking one of like a million examples, but you can constantly go on about this. And the way that he's just is like, he's a little bit like overly positive, and he kind of like shields the players a little bit in terms of, like, I find that there's much less talk about what players are saying as opposed to like, and this could also just be a result of them generally speaking being good in the standings. So maybe there's like less to pick on, but I did feel like back in like the Kessel, like FNUF era, we'll call it, there was a lot more talk about like what those guys were saying or not saying after games. Like, it was like a constant story. And then until like, you know, Lupul kind of emerged as a bit more of like an articulate presence. So all I'd say is I think he does a good, like, I think Sheldon does a good job for those kinds of moments. But I think what we'll look back on, which will really be the marker of everything here, is special teams, which I know that I understand that they have a power play coach and a penalty kill coach, but ultimately at the end of the day, everything, you know, the buck stops with Keefe. Like, I'm sure he'd be the first one to admit that too. You know, I've given a break on the power play because Marner's out, and you know, Riley's been playing through something and all of these things. Kalle Järnkrok's been out, who is, you know, he would be on the second unit, which does like every little bit helps, right? So I've been quick to be like, I'm not too concerned about the power play just yet. Like, I'd like to see them healthy, and then if they still stink, then that's a problem. But make no mistake, if their power play sucks in the playoffs, like that is on the coaches. Like, that is bad. Like, that is unacceptable given the talent level at their disposal. Like, they have about as much talent as anybody in the league to create a good power play unit. So if that's a problem, like, that's a problem for Keefe. And, you know, to some degree, the penalty kill, I think Tree Living probably did not bring in, not probably, he did not bring in enough penalty killing expertise to start the season. Like, they kind of essentially, you know, in Keefe's words, tried to manufacture penalty killers. I don't think that's his fault. Like, you know, it's easy to forget, like, they were starting the season with Matthew Knies on the penalty kill. Like, that was how grim it was at the start of the season. And now they're, you know, you just mentioned like Bobby McMahon's like 57 games in and he's not really a penalty killer, but they're trying to make him one. Pontus Holmberg hasn't played that much. And, you know, I think he's played a little bit more than Bobby McMahon, trying to make him a penalty killer. And it's the end of March and you're looking at these guys for like the first time in their lives. And you're like, hey, you're going to kill penalties in the NHL. And like, that's not even really your calling card. Like, no one was looking going into the season being like, Bobby McMahon's like a penalty kill extraordinaire in the minors. Like, bring this guy up. Like, maybe he can save something. Instead, he's like up and people are going, ah, well, you know, he's strong and he's fast and maybe that translates to the penalty kill, so let's try him there. Like how much can Keefe really own that, right? Like, they don't have like a good right-handed defenseman penalty killer. Like, I don't think Labushkin's it. I don't think Liljegren's it. Like, they, you know, that whole side is just like a, it's just like a welcome zone for the, you know, for whoever's playing that half wall. It's like, get comfortable. Like, you're not going to be disturbed. So like, that part he doesn't own. Like, I do think it needs to be somewhat respectable. Like, it should be a little bit better than what it is. But by and large, like, I don't think he owns that one. I think he has to own the power play if that's bad. And the last thing I'll say about it, and then flip it back to you, is ultimately, to me, we'll see what happens when Marner's back, because if Marner comes back and he just walks right back to the top line and it's like the same old song and dance, I would be personally frustrated. I'm not saying it won't work. Like, Matthews and Marner are obviously good enough to like go on a heater for a couple months and take you to special places. Like, we saw them go on a heater and carry them to like a 13-3 run like a month ago. So that's obviously, like, it's not out of the question. But when I look at it, I still think that their best chance at winning, especially with this defense and probably with their special teams, is to have a three-line attack. And in order to have the proper three-line attack, you're going to need Matthews on one line, you're going to need Nylander on the other, and you're going to need Marner on that one after that. And that's the truth. Like, that's still how I look at it. I think they have more depth and talent. I think this is their deepest forward group. Like, it's easy to forget that, like, they were running 11-7 more often than not last year in the playoffs because their 12th forward was Zach Aston-Reese, who was just unplayable come playoffs. Like, I'll never forget the backhand area pass game one against Tampa a minute into the game as a fourth liner who's no longer in the NHL this year. Like a backhand, anyways. Like, they have, like, a good forward's going to sit game one in the playoffs. Like, they just, there's not enough roster spots. Like, they're someone good, like, someone's like legitimately good is going to sit. So, like, there's options and he can spread it out. And I'll get back to that, but I'll let you talk about Keith first, because I've talked a lot here.
Yeah. In terms of the line construction, you know, you're always judging a coach based on what he has at his disposal. Like, some coaches just have a dog shit team and it doesn't really matter what they do. It's just, it's not going to work. Right. And the Leafs, for a lot of the Keith era, have had sort of a dog shit bottom six, where it's like, it doesn't really matter how you blend these components up. Like, you're going to have two lines that score a bunch because you've got the big guys. And, like, yeah, there may have been times where they could have spread it out, but spreading it out would have made less sense because you would have been putting a Marner, a Nylander, a Tavares or whatever with these guys who just aren't going to be skilled enough to complement them. Whereas now when you mix up the lines, you're putting them with maybe a Domi, a Nyes, a Yarncroke, like a guys with a higher level of skill that you think they can do something with. Like Tavares playing third line, I know that hasn't been the case recently and since Marner went down, but there was a lot of success with that experiment because the wingers in that middle six have been successful with him, because they're good enough to play with him and they're good enough to not squander his talent. And whether it would be Marner doing that or at times Nylander, like, you know, when you've got guys like Bertuzzi, Domi, etc., it makes a little more sense. The special teams is interesting because it's just two very different stories. Like the power play, the guys are so good, you should kind of have success no matter what. And really what you should be judged on is come playoff time, where you're facing the same team 5-6 times in a row. Like, do you have enough tricks in your bag that the other team isn't going to just figure that group out? And the track record thus far has been that no, they haven't had that success. And you could say that the sample is small enough that we don't confidently know for sure, like a couple different bounces, things would look very different, but that's what the results have been so far. So if I'm judging Keefe on the power play side of it, I'm judging him on that. On the penalty kill side, he doesn't really have the horses. And especially recently with Yarncroke and Marner out, you think they're going to improve a little bit with, you know, Edmondson coming in and Dewar being a guy that has the ability to do it. What I would want to see from the penalty kill a little bit more is just a bit more aggression, to be honest. Like, you watch Carolina and they're willing to go after the guy with the puck and they'll worry about if you thread a pass later. They're like, we're going to meet you where you are. To make like a cross sport comparison here, which hasn't been enough of on the podcast, but you know that I love them. It's like a football defense thing. It's like, are you going to sit back in coverage or are you going to blitz? It's like, we'll blitz and we'll leave someone open, but we're going to believe that you're not going to be able to find that guy because we're harassing you and we're in your face. And it seems like the Leafs sit back more. And when your personnel isn't especially talented, I would rather you do something more radical from a scheme perspective to try and compensate for that than say, oh, we're going to be pretty conventional here and our guys aren't especially talented. It's just hard for that to result in something that's going to be positive for the team, to be honest. And maybe if they press the puck a little bit more, there could be some disastrous open one-timers that just go by their guy. But I would rather see that than the alternative of what we've seen so far. We're fairly deep in at this point, and I know something that you wanted to put on the agenda was a discussion about balancing development and present success right now with this group. And I think that that's a conversation we should definitely have, because when it comes to the Leafs and the Stanley Cup drought and the playoff frustration, sometimes it feels like there's always that, like, this year has to be the year, this run has to be the run. And with Matthews and Nylander locked up over the longer term and the potential for a healthier salary cap situation coming up in the future, I'm not so sure that there has to be that dire a mindset around this season. Not that any season with a team this good is one you want to be dismissive of, but that balance that we haven't really seen in recent seasons is one that has become important in 2023, 2024.
Yeah, and I think when you constantly approach it that way, this is how you get into a situation where Timothy Liljegren's is in his third year with the team. And it feels like the first year where they're actually saying, like, you're on the team, like, come playoff time and you're going to play. So he's played in seven of 18 playoff games the past 2 years, right? And often just as, like, a, you know, someone else got hurt, or someone else is banged up, or someone is not playing well, or, like, we need to shake things up, or, like, that kind of insertion into the lineup more so than, like, you're, like, an actual guy in this group. And this is, again, the first year that they're really looking at it saying, like, no, like, you're in from this point forward, and it's up to you to show us. And I'm okay with that. But if you're being realistic and you're saying, like, we're looking at Liljegren saying, like, you got to show us, then what's the balance with the rest of the guys? Because we've kind of, like, tiptoed around it, but, you know, the reality is, like, they're gonna win in spite of their defense more so than they're gonna win because of it. And but there are some pieces throughout the lineup where you look at a guy and say, like, this might not be the optimal thing for this year if you're trying to win, but this guy getting experience and starting to figure it out in this kind of role and setting, if it, you know, pans out, is the kind of thing that sets the table for you for next year and possibly the year after that, right? Like, we're looking at the forward group. Bobby McMahon's going to play in the playoffs for the first time. Like, Matthew Nyes played in the playoffs last year, but this is his rookie year in the league. We'll see how that translates. Like, it's one thing to come in, like, hot from college, playing, like, 40 games and feeling really good about yourself, and it's another to go to the playoffs after 82. Probably not the same level of confidence that he had last year, which we've seen with all sorts of guys and how that kind of plays out for them. So, you know, and then you got Pontus Holmberg's going to play in his first playoff games. Like, Connor Dewar's 24 and he's played 7 playoff games and doesn't have a point yet. Like, you know, you're inching towards, that's half of your forward group at this point. And so I'm kind of curious as to what the approach is here, because on one hand, you're trying to win right now, like without question, like, there's no argument here to be had about, like, punting anything away. So just trying to be, like, crystal clear on that. You have Tyler Bertuzzi's on a 1-year contract. Max Bertuzzi's on a 1-year contract. The more I look at the numbers, the odds of being able to keep both are, like, very slim. You probably will have to pick one of the two at best, if you even want to, right? And you brought those guys in to be playoff scorers. I think they've talked about that enough now, where it's like the secondary scoring hasn't really been there, or just the scoring in general hasn't really been there. Come playoff time, we're going to try to add more talent to the group. So that's something. But at the same time, if you're looking at it going, well, Bobby McMahon's going to play his first playoff games and he's going to be in the top 6, and Matthew Nyes is going to be in the top 9, or, you know, one of the two, most likely top 6, top 9, whatever you want to call it. Pontus Holmberg, same thing. It's like, it's not really a league where, and we said this for years as is, it's like, This is not really a league where rookies come in and are difference makers come playoff time. So, you know, when you kind of shake that out, I look at a guy like Simon Benoit, who, like, we know Simon Benoit is going to be on the team next year. Like, he's a restricted free agent. Like, they're almost certainly going to keep him. It would be wild if they didn't.
Especially considering all the defensemen hitting free agency, too. It's like they need bodies, and he would be an inexpensive option.
Yeah. So, but are you not looking at that then, saying, like, I would rather just have him in and it is what it is, and he learns how to play in the playoffs and we take our lumps with it this year in hopes of next year? Like, obviously, if he's actively sewering your team, you can't just put him in, night out. Like, I'm not saying to look at it and say, well, like, we're just running with him come hell or high water. And if he makes mistakes, like, so be it. Like, that's not where this team is at from, like, a development standpoint. Like, he can't be doing things like that. But, you know, if the difference at this point between him and TJ Brody is negligible, like, does the tie not go? Like, the tie often goes to the veteran, realistically. But, like, should the tie just at this point not go to this young guy, considering you're probably going to play all these other young guys anyways? And, like, that's just, like, what the group is. And you're trying to, like, build something here for the next, like, 2 years. I mean, like, you already have Matthews and Nylander signed. Marner still has a year to go. And, you know, I'm not saying he's 100% going to sign, but, like, I would say I would, if I was to bet money on it, I'd say it's more likely to happen than to not. Like, so are you not just looking at it saying, I would rather just work with this group and, like, start, like, continue to, like, build on these, like, foundation, you know, building block type pieces? I'm not saying Simon Benoit is, like, a foundation, like, you know, game changer, but I do think he's a guy that's, like, part of their culture that they're trying to, like, build and develop now in terms of their identity and how they want to play. So to me, like, I look at it and say, like, what's the balance here, essentially?
Yeah, I get that. I think it's kind of case by case, right? Like, how strongly do you feel like player X is a part of your future? Like Matthew Nyes, for instance. Like, Matthew Nyes, the way he's played in recent weeks, like, you could envision him struggling in the playoffs. Like, he has not been particularly good, and he has struggled to kind of find the rhythm when he's been on the first line. And we've discussed this before about finding that rhythm where you're the complementary piece, and then you go to a worse line and you're, like, the best threat, but he's not really nailed that role either. But you think of Nyes as someone who is a huge part of the longer term success of the Maple Leafs, particularly in the playoffs, because he's got that size and that strength, and, like, him with a little bit more development could be the type of guy, exactly the type of guy who thrives in the playoffs. We're just not quite there with him yet. So he's someone where I'm like, I'd be very reluctant to take him out of the lineup, reluctant to move him down to the fourth line or something, even if he struggles, because him getting that experience is extremely valuable to the Maple Leafs longer term. But then you look at someone like Pontus Holmberg, for instance, and for him, I'm like, what are you able to give me right now? Because Holmberg is someone who could be part of the Leafs bottom six over the longer term. Absolutely. Like, he's someone who's shown himself to be versatile, useful player, all that jazz, but he's not a guy I feel that way about, where I think I'm really, really confident that he's a part of the team's future. You know, Nick Robertson, really interesting case, because
you take that back about Pontus Holmberg.
And then McMahon's in the same boat. Like, even though you've signed him for 2 years, I think, you know, considering his age, he's someone where you're more worried about what he gives you now. Nick Robertson is just he's in a weird spot. I think he's probably, you have to put him in that, what is he giving me now boat? And if everyone's healthy, it's just hard to see him in the lineup.
I think Robertson's in a weird spot, but I look at Holmberg and McMahon, like, we know McMahon will be here next year. And my guess is Holmberg would be here as well. Like, I'd be very surprised. He's making $800,000. Like, unless he has some crazy trade value I'm unaware of, like, it wouldn't make sense to not have a player who's, like, a legit NHLer like he is, that's on the younger side, that's versatile and has shown he can play to some degree with your top guys, and he can play lower in the lineup. And, you know, he has some Swiss Army knife value, yeah, we'll call it, for 800,000.
He'll be around for sure, but it's a different category than Nyes, where you're like, this guy's like a building block.
The point to that I'm saying is, like, if he's in your top 12, which I think is a reasonable thing to think that he will be next year, and we know McMahon is, and we know Nyes is, and we know Benoit is probably going to be in their top six, like, well, then play them. Then play them, and it is what it is. Like, you're going to roll with them, and you see how it goes. Like, you're already doing it with Timothy Liljegren, because, again, you're trying to avoid this scenario where, like, a year or two from now, you're like, we're playing these guys, like, all, you know, the first 60 games, and then trade deadline comes, and we're going to be looking for veteran guys to, like, what, play for them instead, which is what they've done with Liljegren. Like, you're actively spending assets to play over the guys that you're developing, because when it comes time to develop them come playoff time every year, like, you have a fear of playing them. Like, at some point you have to buck that trend and just say, yeah, like, we're going to play these guys, and it is what it is.
That's a vicious cycle. And yeah. And I'm very open-minded to the idea of Benoit over Brody. I'm pretty curious to see Benoit's game play out in the playoffs, because I think that sort of the nastiness that he has, the gamesmanship, I think, as you would say, is
huge,
it does
huge
fit
gamesmanship.
It does fit a playoff type scenario. And yeah, the thing with Holmberg and McMahon is that I'm confident enough that within their roles, they are the best options the Maple Leafs have, that I don't necessarily think the question will be asked. Whereas with McMahon or Benoit, not McMahon, sorry, Knies or Benoit, you could see a scenario where they think in the present, we have a better option for this individual role. Whereas, like, I think Holmberg and McMahon are sort of fine. And then Robertson is off in the corner here, where it's like, he's probably not the best guy for the individual role, and we're not sure if we're developing him for the future, which puts him in like this weird spot.
He's in a different category altogether. Like, I would definitely not sit here and argue. Like, he would actually be in the category, to me anyways, of, like, actively detrimental to start him in the playoffs for game one. Like, I could see bringing him into a series if you're not scoring, and at some point you just say, like, we're just trying to add another scorer that can shoot the puck, and because we're not producing right now. I could totally see that once you're into a game or two of the series. But, like, game one, no.
If hockey was structured like soccer, Nick Robertson would be awesome, because he would be a guy that you keep as a sub, and then you bring him on in the 65th minute when you're down by two goals, and you're like, it doesn't really matter what happens on the other end. We need some offense. But in hockey, like, you can dress the 12 forwards
every
and the
game
six defensemen,
0-0.
Right? So, like, it's he's a tough guy. Like, I don't know. I was trying to conceive of a way to use Nick Robertson where it's kind of like the Labushkin Liljegren thing, where he moves between the fourth and third lines, where it's like on the third line he'll play when they're in the offensive zone, and then fourth line he'll play when they're just kind of going out. But if the fourth line is trying to be defensive, you put Yarncroak down, or vice versa with the third line, you could flip those two. I came away thinking that it wouldn't really be worth it. It would be like overcomplicated, and he's not that much of an impact player that's probably worth just setting your lines and going. But there is something to the idea that you might do different Leafs lineups at home and on the road when you're controlling the matchups, particularly when it comes to the Domi at center issue. But I don't know if it's worth it for Robertson.
To me, the worst case scenario is not just losing in round one, but losing in round one on the back of your veterans. You know, like, if you're just watching, like, TJ Brody play 20 minutes a night, and then you lose round one, and then you just, you know, you wave him goodbye in free agency, and Benoit's played one game, and you just sit there and go, what was the point of that? Like, that is pointless to me. Like, you're not winning now, and you're not helping your team win in the future. And like I said, I'm not, like, handing out spots to young guys and saying, like, it's okay if you make mistakes. Like, it's not okay. Like, it's the playoffs. Like, we're still very much trying to win. Like, I don't, like, this is not a charity. This is not a minor hockey tournament for fun. Like, this is the Stanley Cup playoffs in professional hockey in the NHL. So, you know, nothing is handed for free. But I'm saying, if you're looking at it and, like, the differences are negligible, and you're zooming out just even a tad to, like, a long-term view of the team, I think it benefits you to play the young guys as much as you can. I'm not saying, like, in terms of, when I say as much as you can, I don't mean, like, put Holmberg in and give him, like, 18 minutes, but I'm saying, like, have him in the lineup and, like, being part of the rotation and, you know, all those other guys we've talked about. And you got to look at it and say, like, these guys are going to be back next year, and they got to come back, like, knowing what playoff hockey is like, because they played it, not because they watched it in the press box. And there's varying levels of playoff hockey. Like, there is a difference between game one and game six. Like, those are not, like, that is, playoff hockey is a different sport altogether than regular season hockey. Like, there's no other sport that varies to the level between regular season and playoffs like hockey in terms of, like, what's played and the pace and all that. And then within that, each game gets a little tighter and a little more difficult as the Leafs' top guys have continually found out in series deciding games. Like, they are harder. And you're going to benefit. I don't know if they're going to win this year. Like, I, you know, the money, the betting money would be no. But I do think that they have a chance to come back next year where, like, these guys are a little bit more seasoned. They're a little bit more locked and loaded. You have a little bit of cap flexibility to address the defense in the offseason with some, like, legitimately good available options on the market and, you know, potential ways to move things around. Like, you have a deep forward group developing that's, like, largely already in place for next year. Like, I very much look at next year and say, like they should be coming in, like, locked and loaded. Like, I, like, you know, they're going to have a young goalie who's signed for nothing that, you know, I watched the Jersey game. Like, I saw how he played. I watched the Carolina game. I saw how he played. But I think there's a guy there. He just needs to stay healthy, which is a whole story in and of itself. But, like, you have to get there. And in order to get there, you have to, like, prep the guys now. And then I'll also say to Benoit, the more I've thought about it, like, kind of watching the past few weeks play out, is, like, what is their identity on defense at this point?
I mean, it's a jumble, right? Like, pair to pair is different. It's not like Vegas where you're like, oh, these guys are huge and long and smart and you can't get around them. There's no one concrete thing.
Yeah, but I would say that they're trying to be aggressive, and, like, generally speaking, they are big. Like, you know, like, there's, like, a level of, like, physicality that they're trying to inflict between Joel Edmondson, Jake McCabe, and Ilya Lyubushkin, and, like, some level of, like, size and, like, some snarl and all those things. And I just look at it and say, like, Simon Benoit plays to that identity. Like, you have three guys like that already in. And he gives you a fourth, which tips the scales. Like, it just, you know, it's not, again, like, it's not a good defense. Like, I think we can all see that. Like, no one's going to sit here and argue otherwise. But at this point, you might as well lean into who you are.
He's also handy on the penalty kill. And I know that he, you know, he hasn't gotten as much time on that, but Brody has not been particularly effective on the penalty kill. And there might be a touch of separation there. I'm open-minded to it for sure. I think the bigger question is how open-minded is Sheldon Keefe to that? You know, he's someone who is, I don't know if, like, coaching for his job is overly dramatic, but another instant playoff failure would do him no favors. And he might feel like going down with Simon Benoit when a proven option, quote unquote, like TJ Brody is on the bench, would make him look bad. And coaches are always thinking, unfortunately, kind of reverse engineering situations and how that would make them look good or bad depending on the result. And that is what I would question. Because with the forward group, a lot of these guys are already in the lineup. They're already doing these roles. It's not like there's a bunch of veteran forwards they brought in at the trade deadline that are going to come in, replace them with super uninspired Alex Kerfoot-like play. Like, they're going to roll with... There's always
shout
room
out.
For a Kerfoot shutout. So, like, it's not like there's kind of a wave of guys who can come in with defense. There are more options. Like, in theory, you could even bring in Mark Giordano. I don't think that's going to happen, but, like, that's a theoretical option that's on the table.
I do hope we see Giordano at least once more, though. Like, I really hope his career doesn't end like that. Like, I hope that's not his last play in the NHL. Like,
because also they're probably going to be in this little place they're floating in the standings where the last 2-3 games or whatever it is might not matter at all. It might as well, especially at home, give him a game, you know, at Scotiabank, stuff like that.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Giordano. Like, I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for guys that, like, come home, they take a discount. Like, he, you know, his talent obviously declined over the past, like, couple of years. Like, he's the oldest player in the league, but, like, he very much got by to me on, like guts and, like, character and heart and, like, all those things. Like, he literally was, like, a warrior for the past couple of years. Like, he, you know, fearless shot blocker. There's guys that are 15 years younger than him that won't launch themselves in front of shots the way that he will. Like, I'm not saying like he's good at this point or he should be a top six option or any of those things. I'm just saying like as a fan of the team, like you often talk about like wanting to see like guys like come home and like have a lot of pride on the jersey and like those things. And like, to me, he wore that, like he was one of those guys, and he signed for peanuts to say like he could have made way more money on the market. I think everyone knows that. So he's always been a guy I've been like you have to make your points, you have to call things as you see them, but it's always been in like the back of my mind where it's like I've so much respect for him. Like, you know, I was even watching Connor Brown on the Oilers on Saturday, going like thinking about the Curtis McElhinney game against Pittsburgh, with which they made the playoffs on, and Connor Brown scored the goal with like 3 minutes left or whatever it was to like make the playoffs, and like him jumping up and down like emphatically after he scored, and like what a great story he was, like a, you know, just a hometown kid and all that fun stuff. Like, it, you know, I don't want to ever see the Oilers do well, so like that part is what it is, but like it has kind of sucked watching him like struggle throughout the year, like knowing like what he was, and like I thought he, you know, he worked his bag off here and was like, he was a great story. He was like a sixth round pick and worked his way up and didn't take no for an answer and all those fun things. But yeah, like, to, you know, to the original point about like Mark Giordano and like Simon Benoit and like those kinds of things, like I, you know, I think interestingly enough to all the talk about Sheldon Keefe, I would say if he is starting Simon Benoit over TJ Brody, that would partly probably be a nod in his favor at that point, would it not? Like, if he's sitting there going like, I'm going to start this younger guy and like, I'm just going to take it and like, it is what it is. Is that not something that a coach that's more likely to be here next year would do?
Yeah, I think it's bold. Like I said, I think it's arguably the right move and it's a bold move, but it's also a move that you could, if you're a general manager, like it opens him to criticism. And that doesn't mean it's the wrong move or the right move or whatever. Like, I think even spreading out the core four opens him to criticism because there is proof of concept for Marner, Matthews, for Tavares and Nylander. And even if something is the right move, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the safe move. And the safe move is going with the guy who is a veteran in the league with years and years of playoff experience, who's consistently played 20 plus minutes a night. And until this year has been effective in defensive roles for a team that needs defense. So again, if I'm Sheldon Keefe, I really do like the idea of putting Benoit in. And if he goes with Brody and he sticks with Brody too long, despite the fact that he struggles, and again, I'm not saying that's 100% going to be the case, but Brody's been struggling a lot lately. So if he starts with Brody and Brody struggles and then he goes to Benoit, I think that's sort of like an easier road for him to justify when he's, you know, in that end of season meeting or whatever. But I'd like to see Benoit from the start. And I don't think Brody does a ton for this team at this point, if everyone's healthy, but I could envision him seeing things differently and being more risk averse.
I also think there's something to be said about some like youthful, like naivety, you know, like guys just coming in and they're like irrationally like confident. And
get Connor Timmins in there then if you want the irrational confidence.
No, but seriously, like, oh, he's the definition of irrational confidence. Like, he tries things out there and I'm like,
his game,
honestly,
against
I'm like laughing.
New Jersey was absolutely wild. Like, there was one shift where he wasted an entire first line shift. Like, he came in, he blew the pass, it went the other way, he got the puck down, then he took it all the way around the net and then blew a pass to the front and the whole Matthews shift was gone. And I was like, this is like the Leafs team's first line is on the ice and no one else is going to touch the puck. I love it. I look forward to hopefully seeing more of him next year. Hard to see a road to him being in the playoffs without significant injuries, but yeah, he's a fun player if he can stay healthy and build some momentum, which, you know, it's been years and years and years and years, and he hasn't been able to do that ever. So it's hard to project that forward, but you know,
we talked about it when he had mono. It's like, it's always something. Like, that was the perfect time. Like, when he was the first guy I thought of when all those injuries started going down. And I was like, wow, like Connor Timmins is going to get like a 3 week run here. Let's see if he can like make a case for himself. You know, like you're like an a no choice everyday NHLer, and it's like, oh, Connor Timmins has mono, like he's actually not. And then we're watching like Marshall like Rafai get like games, and like Max Lajoie was like in the top four at one point
on the power play.
Yeah, like yeah, and Connor Timmins probably sitting there with mono watching it going like, oh my god, like I like this is just the worst possible timing my entire life. Like he would have been a regular and he would have had regular power play time, and that was like that pillow soft part of the schedule where the Leafs went off, and you're like, Connor Timmins could have, like, he could have feasted on like the Anaheim Ducks and like St. Louis.
Could have had like an 11 point in 15 game type of stretch with like three goals, and two of them are weird highlight reel ones where he comes in, like, has no business being there.
He has a bomb.
He could score. Like, he,
and that could have been the kind of run where you like look at right now as the defense is in flux, and you say, like, oh, like, you're more likely to say, like, oh, like, what about Connor Timmins and getting him in? It's just, the best ability is availability, and he doesn't have it. Like he has to figure it out. It is what it is, but you know, the talent is obviously there. I'm not advocating to play him in the playoffs yet, like, but I'm okay giving him games down the stretch here to keep seeing how he does. Like, you know, the New Jersey game was what it was, but I think he shows some promising games. Like, I thought he was good in Washington. He should have got a point on that Matthews goal that was called back, and like he flashed a little bit. He definitely can rip a good outlet pass, probably better than basically any of their other defensemen, to be honest with you. So
him and Benoit are also such a natural third pairing, right? Like they have that classic stylistic fit where Benoit has got no, I mean, actually Benoit has been diving deeper into the zone than usual lately. But in theory, when Benoit is sort of playing the game he should arguably be playing, he's playing something that's more conservative, and Timmins is more of the freelancer, and Benoit is the one who's sort of the physical deterrent on that line, and Timmins is the breakout guy. Like, it all works, and they've played well as a pair. Like, if you look at their numbers as a pair, it's kind of almost 120, I think it's 120 plus minutes, and the Leafs have shots and they've got goals, expected goals, obviously not against the top opposition, not in the most difficult situations. But if you went into next year with that as your third pair, I'd be okay with that. You have to have a seventh defenseman that you feel is probably better than your league average seventh defenseman, because you know how unreliable Timmins is. But yeah, when you think about the Maple Leafs next year and where they can save some money and where they can find kind of like better than projection type of performances, I think there's upside in making that your third pair on paper, as long as you have some depth.
Yeah. And that's ultimately, again, like what I'll get back to with, as we like inch closer to the playoffs and the playoff lineup, is to say, look, like if you're already looking at it for next year, I'm not saying to punt this year and look to next year exclusively, but I am saying like you have guys here that are going to be part of like this like team and organization. And if you want to go as far as to call it family, you can do that. And they're going to be here for years to come. And at some point, the only way they're going to learn is if you play them now in the playoffs. Like, you can't go in. You like the worst thing that, again, that happens, like you lose on the back of the veterans, and then you like lose these guys. And then next year, this time, we're having this exact same conversation where it's like, well, like, are you going to play Simon Benoit in the playoffs for like the first time? Like next year, because you didn't do it this year. And now we're looking at, you know, as we're currently looking at Timothy Liljegren being like, oh, like I guess Timothy Liljegren's going to be in the lineup to start the playoffs for the first time as like a guy. And like, I guess we'll see how it goes. Like, you can't, it's that, as you mentioned, like it's that vicious cycle. Like, I think at some point you just have to say, like, we're going to play these guys, and like they're going to have that like youthful, like, you know, naivety to them, and they're just going to have to get after it. And like, we'll let the chips fall where they may, and they'll get battle hardened and learn from these experiences, as you would also, again, hope that the top guys are. And that's also why, like, those are the two biggest things I'll look for, is like they're doing something in terms of building, not just for this year, but for like their roster for years to come with all these guys we know that are going to be here. And two, that they have the stones to actually split up the top guys across three lines and try it out. Because to me, like, what if you're playing Boston or Florida, like Florida has the Barkov line, and a large part of that series to me was like Barkov just blanked Matthews. Like, he just blanked him. Like, Barkov is exceptional. Like, I think he's bordering on a top five player in the league. Like, he's amazing. So it that's not entirely a knock on Matthews. Like sometimes you're going to go, you know, Bobrovsky was great. They have a great D pairing behind Barkov, like all of these things.
But if Barkov blanks Matthews again, you lose again, right? Like Matthews still has to come up with a better performance if you're going to win that series.
So this is my point now. So the other thing with Florida to keep in mind is like now they've moved Reinhardt was not up with Barkov last year. Right. So now they've moved up Reinhardt with Barkov. And like, that's been like legitimately one of, if not the best lines in the league from game one through to today. And okay. So let's say Barkov blanks Matthews. Like what if Matthews blanks Barkov and Reinhardt and you have Marner on the third line now going up against Anton Lundell and A2 Lesterainen. I like the Leafs chances in that scenario, but like some, like you have to like, I don't know how much Matthews would have to be sold on it, but like you got to look at Matthews and say like you're going to eat it. Like you're going to eat shit so the team can win. Basically. Like you're going to play defense, like you're going to play with like Cali Yarncroc and like Tyler Bertuzzi and you guys are just going to grind, you're going to get pucks deep, you're going to you're going to kill clock, you're going to make sure Barkov and Reinhardt don't go off and have like 7 to 10 point series each. The same way that Pasternak did against them a few years ago. Or if you play Boston again, same thing with Pasternak. It's like you're going to go up against Pasternak and like you're just going to make sure he doesn't score. And we're going to look at our next two lines, one with Tavares and Nylander and one probably with Domi and Marner. And we're going to say like you guys plus a combination of us sorting out our special teams is going to win the series. And that's how it's going to go. And you're going to have to take some real sacrifice as part of that. Like the worst thing is like you load up and Barkov just like either blanks them and or even just actively beats them in 5-on-5 goals. And then you're like looking at a third line of who? Like, you know, Nyes, Domi. And you're like, oh, like that third line has to be the difference maker here, not like one of our top guys. So I don't know. When we talk about having like an immature game, like sometimes I look at it as like an overall like immature approach where they've continually tried this, like we're going to load up and no one's going to stop Matthews and Marner. And then teams just do, right? It's like they do and then they win. And it's like you shrug and you go, oh, well, I guess that it is what it is. Like they.
Yeah. I mean, the as good as Matthews and Marner are, there is proof of concept for them being stopped. Like we have seen the playoffs over the last few years. So it's like we can treat them as an unstoppable force based on some statistical markers. And we know stylistically how perfect they are for one another. But the fact of the matter is, if they were an unstoppable force, the Maple Leafs wouldn't have been stopped in some of these playoffs. And we know that there's some like bullshit and luck involved in some of the playoff losses they've had. But like the results also speak for themselves. Like you can't have lost so many playoff series and won so few and done everything right.
Yeah. And
it's,
like
it's just not possible.
And I don't care who scores in the playoffs. I don't think any fans care. I think people want to see wins. Like they want to see advancing. Like they want to see a conference finals appearance. They want to see, God forbid, a Stanley Cup appearance. Like if they're 21 games in and they're playing Stanley Cup game one and Matthews has 0 points, because all they've done is, and like he wouldn't obviously have 0 points, but like to exaggerate, he has a low point total, let's say 6-21, and they're going to the Stanley Cup final because they've said to him like, you're just going to go up against top guys and you're going to eat it, and like you're going to set the table so everybody else can feast. I wouldn't care. What the level of sacrifice, it has to be there. Like that's what playoffs is. Like you hear the guys, like I've been listening to Justin Williams on the Sportsnet panel a lot lately, and you can hear, like you can hear it in him as like, and that guy's like a true winner. Like he's a true champion in the league. And like the things he's constantly talking about on it, like he's looking for guys that are sacrificing. He's looking for guys that are, you know, not looking for the easy way out on plays. And like, that's why the New Jersey loss is frustrating, because you look at it and you say, like, this is a team that just, like, they made it easy. Like, there was no sacrifice here. And that's why Keefe after the game's like, this is immature. Like, our team shouldn't, like, play like this. Like, it's clear as day to see in terms of how they approach those things at times. And I think fans get it. It's like, that's the daunting thing about playing Boston, because Boston is going to make every single thing you do so hard. And once you get through everything that they've done to make it so hard on you, then you're going up against like the best goalie tandem in net. Like there's no easy, like you're not, like Boston doesn't give you gifts. Boston doesn't say like, here's a 2-on-1 and a 1-1 game at the end of the first period, all the way down the ice from our blue line for free. Like, let's see if you score. They don't do it. Like, buy off. Like, that's like, if you look at their roster, it's not like a great roster. But what they do is they all check like crazy. Like, they're all completely bought in to those concepts. And so, again, like, the larger point is, like, I'd like to see them shade towards like the younger guys that are all like, you know, bricks as part of their foundation. But then I'd also like to see them split up their top guys. Like, Matthews is clearly capable of playing well without Marner. Like, he does, like, again, like, we talked about this last week, like, of course he's better with Marner. Marner's an elite player and they work really well together, and at times they will have to pair up together, but like, he can clearly play without him. Like, I, you know, that was the disappointing thing again, which said, like, I think 3 weeks in a row of Yarncroft getting hurt. Like, I would have liked to see Yarncroft get the run with Matthews and Bertuzzi, because I think that that line has the goods to go up against a Barkov Reinhardt line and check diligently and work the walls and just also maybe flip the script on them for once and make their life miserable and have them shut down. And then look at the other Leafs top guys across two other lines and say, like, they're going to tilt the scales in our favor, which is like never the way they've approached it. It's always been like, we're going to load up our guys. And it's going to feel like that game against Edmonton where the Leafs were kind of insulted, and you could hear it in all their post-game comments where they were like, why did Edmonton like load up their guys like that just to blitz us? And, you know, like, it's one thing for like, you know, Keith kind of like noted like around it, but like Jake McCabe was like pretty blunt about it. Like, he was just like, we talked about it before the game, like, they loaded up their guys, like, we were going to stop them. Like, you know, Bobby McMahon of all people was like, yeah, like, we banked on our depth. Like, Bobby McMahon is coming out, calling out the Edmonton Oilers in a roundabout way. Like, that's, but that, like, the Leafs are usually that team. Like, that is the Leafs. Like, I was sitting there going, like, I hope they sat there and went, like, this is what we do to other teams, and like, this is the effect that it has on teams. They're like, we're just going to sell out on shutting down Matthews and Marner, and the rest of our team and our special teams are just going to beat them, and that's fine. Like, they have the pieces this year to flip that script. I'd just like to see that happen.
Well, we have 11 games left in the regular season to see if they'll play with some of these concepts, Marner day to day. So we'll see when he gets back. We are out of time, so we will leave you there. We appreciate any ratings, reviews. I do want a flag review we got this week that I thought was particularly excellent, where someone gave us 5 stars on Apple. Said, I don't, there was a nice comment about me. I'm going to leave that aside. Then said, Mike,
that's
is
why
all-
he flagged the comment, just to be clear.
Mike is also great, liked his takes on Kipper and Bourne. So the fact that you guys think that Anthony's name is Mike is fantastic. Love more reviews. Tell us how you feel about Mike. Tell your relatives and friends and everyone you know about the podcast, and we'll be with you again next week.
Everyone is looking at me. Time is running and we're down by 3. Look inside yourself, what do you see? The pain is in your mind, no, nothing stops me. Everyone is looking at me. Heart is pounding and we're down by 3. Look inside yourself, I know what I see.